What's eating what? Well, the COVID-19 made in China virus is eating us up. The whole worldwide us, as a matter of fact. And that leads us to ask, who owns the COVID-19 virus?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1226th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Portofino who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, I got to wondering about who owns this coronavirus that is eating up the world's people. What we first heard of the virus, we learned that it was simply a spontaneous mutation of a coronavirus that made the leap from a bat to some people eating bat soup in Wuhan, China. But then we began hearing other things that had us wondering even more. What we heard were stories of circumstantial evidence that maybe the virus did not come from butchered bat soup, but maybe it came from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, a virus research facility with a level 4 security rating just up the street from the Wuhan wet market. All of this circumstantial evidence we hear leads us to wonder, what if we followed the money and asked, who owns the made in China COVID-19 coronavirus? And here to help us find some answers today, we have Yaakov Appelbaum, who is a cyber intelligence analyst and whose work I have been following in the Gateway Pundit. Yaakov, welcome to Food Chain Radio.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Pleased to have you aboard. Amazing work that you've been doing. First of all, you're a cyber intelligence analyst. How do you go about analyzing cyber intelligence for a real quickie for the folks?
So I actually own a company called XRVision. We specialize in visual intelligence. We've developed a software platform that uses artificial intelligence for visual type searches that include face recognition and conversion of imagery to text, so we can do a complex OCR on the text. We also have the ability to classify and search objects of various sorts in video and still images. And then we also add another layer of data analytics to that using big data as well as several other cyber tools. And that gives us a pretty effective way to trace and look for information online.
And thus you have this ability to look and search for information. You're able to put together some pretty interesting information with respect to the coronavirus. So let's start with that. When it all started off, we heard that all of this came from from somebody eating bat soup in a Wuhan wet market. Of course, the wet market being a place where they sell live animals to eat, they're butchered and eaten and whatnot. But do you think that this is the case, Yaakov?
So one of the things that we did for the purpose of illuminating this mystery, because obviously it's driving everybody either a little bit sick or a little bit crazy, was to look at the factual evidence. And when we unleashed the AI to look for the evidence, we discovered a lot of interesting things. So one of the trending pieces of information online was, as you described it, that there's this strange, unusual habit of individuals consuming bats in a variety of either fried or cooked forms in Wuhan. The AI that we use has the ability to decompile and traverse massive amounts of information. So, for example, one of the things that the AI did is visited all of the restaurants in Wuhan. It collected all of the menus. It collected all of the food reviews from tourists that visited Wuhan for the past 10 years. And it collected a lot of other related information, and it concluded based on that that Wuhan has never seen any type of dishes that are based on bats. And if they do, they are certainly not being sold either in the market or in the restaurants.
So nobody's buying bat soup in Wuhan?
So nobody's buying bat soup. Now, individuals may still make bat soup their houses, but it's very unlikely because we couldn't find any evidence that beds are being sold in the market. So we have a larger collection of advertisements from Wuhan, imagery of advertisement with prices, and we found everything. We found rabbits, we found foxes, we found snakes, geese, camels, dogs, cats, donkeys. We found a lot of domesticated and non-domesticated animals, but we didn't find even one evidence of bats being present. So that was one component which generated an anomaly.
And that you're able to search so much data, you were able to figure this out in a relatively short period of time. And once you figured out that there were no bats being eaten and sold in Wuhan, what did you think?
So, you know, so the entry point into the search was a certain base assumptions. So we always, when you gather intelligence or you evaluate intelligence, you know, the first approach is to attack the information, try to disvalidate it for a number of reasons, either because the information has been placed there on purpose, maybe it's disinformation, maybe the information is faulty, maybe the sources are faulty. So the first approach is always to try and discredit the information. And the key assumption in searching for bat consumption or the availability of bats in Wuhan was to find even one instance where bats are consumed by individuals. And we couldn't find that. So that generated an anomaly. An anomaly basically means that then the whole bat story need to be examined a little bit closer. Okay? Because if we found at least one instance, then it would have been plausible. So the anomaly that was generated then branched the AI. The AI then decided to branch and start looking for the sources of the imagery that was being published on mainstream media and social networks. And there were a significant number of images that people uploaded showing the residents of Wuhan enjoying a delicious cup of bat soup. And again, the AI successfully traversed all of those images and found the sources. And we discovered that all of those images, without any exception, were generated in circa 2016, 2017, either on the island of Palu or Indonesia. None of those images, based on metadata, based on the type of device that generated it, based on the GPS location of the images when they were first created, and based on many other factors, originated from China. All of them came from either the island of Palu or Indonesia, and we also found the restaurant specifically where those individuals were located.
So somebody was somebody was sending out disinformation.
Somebody was sending out disinformation. Now, interestingly, the AI was able to enhance some of the menus on the tables, and actually we got the names of the restaurant where those items were being served, including the telephone number, and we actually followed up and verified that indeed they do serve a better order.
Wow.
So the question then became, who is uploading the content? In at least one of the events, we discovered that one image showing a part of boiled bats in it originated from an IP cluster that belongs to the Chinese government. So that was one indication that somebody affiliated with the Chinese government, or maybe doing it on his own initiative, was uploading that image to social media.
They used the office computer.
They potentially used an office computer, or they used their own personal device, but they connected to an IP network that belonged to the Chinese government.
So you see that something's going on, and that maybe it isn't what we have been told. So you start looking in a different direction. What directions did you start looking?
So, you know, the whole idea, again, intelligence gathering is to validate the information or discredit it. Now, once you create yourself a collection of validated information and the information that you discredited, you can go to the next phase and ask questions about what is the purpose of somebody presenting that information. So why is somebody providing that narrative? And in the case of the origin in the animal market, we discovered that there was a lot of discussion in China during the first week of February, actually the last week of January, the first week of February, where a number of individuals were alleging that the release actually came from the Wuhan virological lab. These were allegations that were coming from within China. Now, those allegations were silenced very quickly. By the second week of February, there were a number of government directives that prohibited any disclosure or any discussion on social network relating to the unexplained or unknown Wuhan pneumonia.
And
you
have posted here on, what is it, the 2nd of February, Yun Yi Wang, who is the director general of the Wuhan Virology Institute, sends out an email ordering staff not to discuss the outbreak or release any information or materials about it. So this is...
That's exactly it. And yeah, and the interesting thing is that the authorities within the Virology Institute refer to the epidemic, to the emerging epidemic, as an unknown pneumonia. So they actually have a term for it. It's an unknown form of pneumonia. And the instructions are to cease all external communication. The interesting thing is that the moratorium on communication also includes state media, as well as technical service companies. In other words, companies that provide services to the WVI. It also includes all external collaboration. So the Chinese had a number of projects that were running at the time that involved the French government as well as U.S. collaboration. So essentially what you're saying is cease all communications with everyone, which would be really interesting because it impacts, obviously, the relationship. The historical context of this is that in the previous outbreak of another SARS in China, that led to the death of a number of individuals, the WVI was extremely active in the media during that time. They were constantly on TV. Their staff was constantly providing briefs. They were offering opinion. They were offering advice. They were doing a lot of strategic PR management. But in this incident, the entire institute was completely silent and dark.
And the last SARS epidemic, they stood up and they said, this is what's going on and we're here to protect you. But this time, they all shut up and didn't say a word. Now, going to the, the 3rd of March, or the 2nd of March, Dr. Wu Xiaohua, who is a doctor at the Wuhan Institute, writes that Shenzhen Li's carelessness and lax laboratory safety precautions had led to the leaking of the virus into the outside of Wuhan. So they're saying that one of their staff people leaked it out by carelessness.
So just a correction, Dr. Wu is not affiliated with the Wuhan Institute of Virology. He's an external individual, but he's offering an opinion as somebody that is in the know. Apparently, he knows something about Dr. Shai Zhangli's mode of operation and her carelessness, and he's offering an opinion. The reason why it is important is typically in China, you would not post anything on social media with your real name.
Okay, so we're going to have to take a quick break right now, but when we come back, we'll pick this thread up and we'll ask who owns the Wuhan or the Made in China or whatever they call it, the COVID-19 virus. Do stay tuned. Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking about the Wuhan or the Made in China coronavirus or whatever it is. COVID-19, I guess, is what the World Health Organization is calling it, with Yakov Appelbaum, who is a cyber intelligence expert and who figured out to unleash a artificial intelligence program that went searching for answers to fundamental questions that he had. And the first question he asks is that, did people get sick from eating bats? And lo and behold, nobody's eating bats in Wuhan. They don't even sell them there and haven't for forever. They do that in Indonesia, but not in Wuhan, China. So somebody was spreading disinformation. Who is it? We come to the fact that there are people within and without the Wuhan Virology Institute who are saying it was, in fact, the Wuhan Virology Institute that leaked the coronavirus out. Jakob?
So we don't have anyone from within the institute that made that claim, either on social media or in broadcast media.
Okay.
But we do have our external individuals within China that made those claims. Now, some of those individuals are pretty reputable. So the chairman of Douyi, Xiaobo, essentially is the CEO of a multi-billion-dollar company, gaming company in China, in February 4th makes that allegation that it is very likely that the Virology Institute was manufacturing and the virus leaked out of that lab. Now, you know, the chairman of a major organization like that is not a lightweight. And, you know, somebody like that speaks with authority. We also have some other interesting anomalies that happened within the first week. But, for example, if you look at the org structure of the institute, you will see that it is actually a subsidiary of the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So the P4 laboratory, mm-hmm. the high security laboratory, is a subsidiary of the institute. The P4 laboratory is actually 30 kilometers away from the market. It's not right next to the market.
Okay. It's 20 minutes away or something like that?
Yeah, the facility right next to the market is the Infectious Disease Control Center. So it's a slightly different organization. A lot of people confuse this too. But the P4 site, where allegedly the virus escaped, is a subsidiary of the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which is in Wuhan. And that that organization itself is managed by the Chinese Academy of Science. Mm-hmm. The Chinese Academy of Science is a Communist Party organ. It's an official organ of the Communist Party. And if you evaluate the activity within the first week of February, something really interesting happens. The organization, which is supposedly run by civilian scientists and bureaucrats, is taken over by General Chan Wei. She is the People's Liberation Army foremost authority on biological and chemical weapons. They refer to her as our nation's ultimate expert in Chinese.
One other thing that happened about that time that caught my attention, and I don't know where I read it, but I'm pretty sure I read it, and that was a memo that Xi Jinping put out that said essentially something to the effect that we have to do a better job safeguarding our biological research labs. Now, maybe I was mistaken in seeing that, but sometime around there, I'm pretty sure that Xi Jinping put out that memo, and that caught my attention. I thought, that's interesting. We must be saying something here. And then they bring in the head general for bioweapons to take over this laboratory, and that says something too, doesn't it?
So what the communication actually from the government says is that, yes, we do have to do a better job managing the safety of the facilities, but it's actually saying something slightly more important, and that is that all information disclosure that relates to this and other related biological events is going to be regulated through a certain number of new laws, and those laws should be accelerated in their adoption. So in other words, what they're creating is litigation in real time to prevent the spread of information through either social media activity or academic publications. And this is the reason why now we suddenly see that you can no longer publish in China any academic papers that relate to the COVID virus or any other viral activity without prior review. And so that's essentially what he was saying.
Mm-hmm. And they were publishing studies about the coronavirus, the bat coronavirus, as a matter of fact, in various publications like Lancet, were they not?
So so these are actually two different things. One is the historical publication, and they were going out of their way to publish. So, for example, if you look at in the case of Professor Shai Zengili, who is the manager and the team leader of the Department of Emerging Viruses, And she actually has multiple titles, but she's the one, she's the bet lady. She's the one that identified the bets in 2013. She did all of the research. She brought hundreds of specimens. Dr. Shai Zengli has over 110 publications. So they were not publication shy. They were publishing on bulk.
Mm-hmm. And
it
now
is really interesting. Suddenly they put the kibosh on any publications whatsoever without prior review.
So they shut it off. And around this time, did they not change their strategy on how to talk about this virus escaping? Instead of it being from the Wuhan wet market, they started saying it was from the U.S. Army. That the U.S.
Army... So it's a very interesting piece of narrative. It's very unlikely that... the U.S. Army... is an interesting concept when it's used in China, because the Chinese view their intelligence operations in terms of the People's Liberation Army. So they're almost using a Chinese language to describe what the Americans would do to them. An operation like that, if you are releasing a toxin in a foreign country, would not be done by the U.S. Army. It would be done by an intelligence agency of some sort.
Sure.
It certainly would not be done by a branch of the armed forces. So, just the language itself is kind of clear of where they're getting the metaphors from. But, they've offered no evidence to the fact that the source of the outbreak was the animal market in the first place. We have no evidence to the fact they're not showing any change of distribution. Even the spread pattern itself suggests social network-based person-to-person transmission and not an epicenter. The person-to-person network transmission would follow a model where an employee at the facility got infected. He went home at the end of the shift. He had a drink, maybe in a bar with a number of friends. They got infected, and then they infected other individuals. So what we are seeing is something that is closer to that kind of infection mode than to an epicenter where one store in the market infects hundreds of individuals. We're just not seeing that kind of infection right now. The Chinese are very quiet about who got infected, so it's very difficult to trace the patient zero. But if they were more open, then we would be able to correlate the employees of the Virology Institute to the individuals that were infected. So that would kind of help answer. But going back to your question about the U.S. Army, they also haven't produced... any information that shows that within the first week of the transmission, they had any information about the sources. And that's somewhat unusual, because usually in an epidemic, the first thing that you do, if you're a center for disease control, you interview each patient and create a very detailed graph of where they were, the timeline, who they spoke to, and what were the circumstances. And we don't have any of those models. None of that was generated.
And that's because the Chinese did not release anything, did they?
That's correct. They did not release any information.
Nor did they release the virus so that it could be sequenced.
So, the virus can be sequenced from the patients, but we know from a number of papers as well as other evidence that the virus has been isolated in the lab from at least 2013. So that virus was already present in the lab. They were doing some advanced research on it. They were experimenting with species-to-species transmission. They were infecting a variety of mammals with that virus, or at least a virus that is very close to it. To at least a high degree of similarity. They were experimenting on pigs. They were experimenting on donkeys. They were experimenting on rabbits. They were also experimenting on human tissue, on lung tissue. And we have that from a number of papers as well as some internal communications from the Wuhan Institute, where there are a number of discussions.
So we also hear that some laboratory technicians were selling those animals back into the wet markets. Have you run across any information relating to that?
Again, that's very unlikely because typically when an animal is kept in the lab and it is infected and there's some pathology, the animal would be dissected and you take tissue samples. So again, okay. This is one of those, based on the evidence that I've seen, I think it's one of those pieces of disinformation that is trying to pass the blame to and attach it to incompetence instead of malice. You know, you can always explain
incompetence. Wait a minute. Incompetence instead of malice? Are you suggesting that there's malice involved in this?
So, you know, you can make the very remote argument that having lax safety procedures in a lab could rise to a level of some kind of negligence. But it's very difficult to explain that kind of negligence. It's much easier to explain incompetence where somebody just took, their monkey and sold it on the market because of greed. So, I think these are, again, two different issues that they're trying to resolve. And that's why we're hearing about bat soup and people that sell laboratory monkeys.
Yeah. Now, I understand that they actually did a search of the Wuhan wet market and were not able to find any of the animals in the market with a similar virus. And I also understand that they leveled the Wuhan wet market so that nobody could find anything there. Are those things true, or is that disinformation as well?
So, again, a lot of what you hear is either exaggeration or complete disinformation. They didn't level the market. They completely washed it and disinfected it. And it looks like somebody went through a crime scene over there and just completely cleaned it up with the detergents and pretty rough industrial cleaning material. So somebody did a lot of cleanup over there. But the market, was still standing. And as a matter of fact, they were discussing opening the market. Now, also keep in mind that there are a number of animal markets in Wuhan. It's not a single market. So the problem, again, is going to be to prove that any of this originated from the animal market.
Does anybody believe that it actually did originate in the wet market? I mean,
we have no proof whatsoever that the virus jumped from the bats that everybody or most individuals agree are the original carrier. But we have absolutely no proof that shows that the virus jumped from the bat to another carrier. That has not been proven. I mean, there are a lot of speculations. And again, you know, part of the disinformation is to suggest that there was another species that contracted it from the bats, and then people consumed it by eating that species. But I think this is just really an extension on the bat soup story. The simpler explanation, if you want to use Occam, and I'm not necessarily a big fan of Occam's razor in intelligence analysis, but if you want to use the simple explanation is that the virus has been kept in the lab for at least 6 to 7 years. You don't need to go with the exotic explanation about individuals consuming bats to the point where the virus is available and people are experimenting on it and infecting cross species to see what the reaction of the virus is going to be. We also have evidence that they're working on potential treatment for that viral infection. So somebody is already doing heads up and is planning the future viral infection cycle where they know that there is going to be an outbreak and they're working already on a number of solutions in terms of vaccines in the lab for that future corona outbreak. So if you have all of those evidence, you really don't need that cross-species migration where the virus jumps to another individual.
There you go. Well, so we're in a situation where we're pretty sure that it came out of the laboratory. Is that a fair assumption then?
Well, we are not sure if it came from the laboratory, but the laboratory is certainly a viable option that should be evaluated. And unless somebody comes up with a conclusive proof that it did not originate from there, it certainly should be one of the top candidates for any evaluation.
Okay. It seems like there's two reasons to study the bat coronavirus. One of them is to see if we can develop a vaccine for in case this bat coronavirus gets out into the public as it has. The other reason would be to see if we can figure out how to use it to create a pandemic. And when we come back from this break, I'd like to ask Jakob what he thinks the situation is. And I'd also like to look at the ownership structure of the Wuhan Virology Institute, which I find to be most illuminating as well. This is the 1226th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Jakob Appelbaum, who is a cyber intelligence analyst, figured out how to use artificial intelligence to search through megadata and find very interesting tidbits of information relating to who exactly owns the coronavirus, the COVID-19 coronavirus, right back. Welcome back, folks. This is the 1226th edition of the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Jakob Appelbaum, who is a cyber intelligence analyst. What fun that must be, using artificial intelligence to go search for answers through this huge world of information that's stored out there in the world. And one of the questions Jakob went looking for was, do they actually sell bats in Wuhan, China, in the wet market? Because that's what they were blaming this COVID-19 virus on, is that people are eating bats in Wuhan. And Jakob went searching. He sent his army of digital intelligence agents out there, and they went looking. And lo and behold, they don't sell bats in Wuhan, China. They don't eat bats in Wuhan, China. In fact, somebody was putting out a stinky story. And who was that? Well, it tended to be people from the Chinese Communist Party or the Chinese government who were putting out disinformation so that we would think it was bats when it really wasn't bats. And what it most likely was the experimental work that they have been doing on bat coronaviruses. And why bat coronaviruses? Because then they can be trained, or they have a proclivity from jumping species. And so there is a lot of interest in them for a number of reasons. One of them being the commercial reason. They can make money on these, possibly. So the Wuhan Virology Institute came into focus in today's The Gateway Pundit. And Jakob, I assumed you put some work in on this project as well, where you put together an All in the Family, the Chinese Coronavirus Connection. And it starts with Jiang Zemin, who was the former leader of the Chinese Communist Party. Always started at the top, right?
That's right. So, Mr. Zemin has a number of sons. His older son, Jiang Meng-Heng, was assigned to the Chinese Academy of Science. He was responsible for the design and construction of the Wuhan Institute of Virology and the P4 laboratory. He did that work between 1999 and 2011. He is also a pretty prolific leader in establishing the entire set of the life sciences industry in China. He established the Shanghai Institute of Life Sciences. He established the Shanghai College and Universities structure, the Shanghai hospitals, the military hospitals, and of course the military research institutions that specialize in biochemical weaponry. His son, Jian Chen, has the controlling interest in a company called Waxi Aptech. Waxi Aptech is one of the leading biotech companies in China, and that company also controls another pharma company called Fosun Pharma. The interesting thing about the Waxi Aptech relationship is that George Soros invested heavily in that organization in around 2011.
So which organization did George Soros invest in?
In Waxi Aptech. Actually, Waxy Reptech had a number of name changes, but the final name is the Waxy Reptech. He invested in another Waxy Reptech that was registered in the Cayman Islands. So a lot of this activity is very difficult to trace because they change the name, they change the location, they change the company names. Mm-hmm. But the nice thing about the AI is that once it latches on, it's like a bloodhound. It will not let go. And eventually it will drill down through all of the obfuscation, through all of the chaff, and eventually it will find the target. And they did eventually find the target, and it is the same company, the Waxy Reptech, that Mr. Mian's son operates, is the same one that Saros invested in. And actually what Saros did is more than invest. He opened the company to the U.S. market so they could actually participate in drug trials for the FDA.
So did George Soros, was he instrumental in opening the U.S. market then?
Absolutely. That's, you know, so Saros didn't invest much. He invested only $3.8 million in the company. But what he did is allow them to operate in the U.S. and participate in FDA drug trials, which was a significant thing because now you can bring all of these Chinese biochemical muscle and compete directly against companies like Pfizer and others in the U.S. And where Pfizer has to follow very strict rules, or any other pharma company or even a bio-research company has to follow very strict rules in terms of animal cruelty and regulations, you don't have to do much of that in China
because the founder is Jiang Zemin, who's going to argue with him, right?
So, you know, so the entire life cycle in China is different. So, for example, if you look at this relationship, you see that they have the research hospitals, they have the Shanghai hospitals, which cater to the proletariat. So you have plenty of samples, you have plenty of individuals that you can experiment on. You can cut a lot of corners. You know, ethics become a second issue to productivity. They file tremendous number of patents just by looking at their patent filings. So you see a pretty aggressive move towards harvesting those viruses for commercial purpose.
And then with respect to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, where does it fit into this particular Jiang Zemin food chain?
So the China Academy of Science, CAS, has a supervisory role in the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Obviously, you're still there?
Yes, I am here.
Yeah, so I thought I lost you. So the CAS is an organ of the Communist Party, the Chinese Communist Party. It is staffed, it is handled, it is managed, and it reports to directly the Chinese Communist Party. Also, they get their funding and their prioritization from the Communist Party. The CIS has a supervisory role in the WIV, and the WIV manages directly the P4 laboratory. Now, if you look at the management structure within the P4 laboratory, we have an individual by the name of Yang Zeming. And Yang Zeming is also the head of the Chinese Academy of Science in Wuhan, the Wuhan division. He also happens to be a business partner of the young Jiang, who has control interest in Waxy Reptech. So it is a very incestual relationship between those individuals.
So essentially the way it was set up then, Jiang Zemin, who is the former leader of the Chinese Communist Party, pretty much set up a family food chain that runs the biotech industry of China, or at least controls a big chunk of it. One of those properties happens to be the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which is now run by the Chinese Army's lead bioweapons expert. And as I guess a partner in this whole enterprise is none other than George Soros.
So, yeah, so I think you're absolutely right. They actually manage all pillars of the biotech industry. They manage anywhere from public health care through the hospital system. They manage military bio weapon research. They manage the life sciences, which would be engineering and R&D. They manage the farm organizations. So where in the U.S. or in Europe you have a distribution of many companies under private ownership, everything over here seems to be organized more or less under a handful of individuals that also have a family relationship.
Well, whatever happened to Dr. Shura, who worked with our own University of North Carolina Research Department, which they shut down in 2014. Now, I understand that she went back to China and really started this whole project up again there, or was it already going there?
So, you know, just from looking at the evidence, and again, you know, we successfully recovered a lot of documents that were deleted by the security services several weeks ago. So they went practically with bleach and started removing a lot of content from their servers. And they are also including a number of postgrad students suddenly disappeared. So there is some speculation that at least one of the postgrad students, an individual by the name of Hang Yinling, was potentially patient zero. But she completely disappeared from their website. They just removed the image and her information. But also two additional individuals that they've deleted, two additional postgraduate students that were working in the lab for diagnostic microbiology, which would have been the testing division of the Institute of Virology. And so, you know, part of the exercise was to actually unleash the AI, and part of the functions of the AI is also to retrieve and deleted content. It's actually very good at finding stuff that people delete. And, you know, once you delete something, it's never deleted. So we successfully recovered a number of documents. And one of the documents indicates that at least Professor Shai was working on that project even earlier than 2014. She actually started the she founded the BAT research project probably around 2012-2013, and if you look at her titles in the organization, it is really interesting because depending on who she interfaces, she has a different title. So, for example, Dr. Zheng Li has a business card that says that she's a team leader of the Department of Emerging Viruses. But then she also has another business card that says that she's a long-term research in pathogenic biology of bats carrying important viruses. She has a leading role in SARS development. She's a director in another organization. So she has actually multiple roles. And I think that those, the multiplicity of the roles is one indicator that she was actually doing parallel research, including the research that she was doing with the University of North Carolina.
And from there, she went to back to China to the Wuhan Virology Institute, WVI, and took up her studies again, and was accused by somebody else, a coworker or a fellow professional, of being sloppy. And they pointed the finger at her and said, she's the one that did it. And is she around? Can you find her?
So she wasn't accused by a fellow worker. That would be very dangerous to do in China. If you level such an allegation against a senior individual like that, it is very likely that somebody would rearrange your organs in a very painful manner. So it wasn't the incident that you're alluding to was not by a fellow worker. A number of individuals made that allegation on social media, and she defended herself, and she said, in translating Chinese, "I swear on my life that the virus did not originate from the research center." And then when she was asked to prove it, she said, "I have better things to do." So that's I think the incidence that you're referring to. But Professor Zengli has been instructed to maintain a complete silence in terms of external communications. Okay. She had kind of disappeared from the map, so I think she's just sitting low and quiet, waiting for the stone to blow over. I haven't seen any releases from her recently.
So if you want to find out who's doing what to whom, one guy a long time ago by the funny name of Deep Throat said you got to follow the money. And it seems like you've been doing a pretty good job of following the money with your artificial intelligence and your little electronic intelligence agents out there running around throughout the internet collecting information. You know, you look at this situation and you say, you ask, who does own the COVID-19 coronavirus that got loosed and is now eating up the world? Who would you say owns it, Yaz? You're the one that's really been digging into it.
So I'll just make one comment about following the money. You know, it's following the money is a cliche that came from the Cold War. And, you know, follow the money is really a core way to identify intelligence targets, because often the intelligence targets that you're tracking use cash, these other forms of payment, they use a bartering system. So, you know, following the money is not a very effective way. Following the money was very effective when you were dealing with organized crime, and there was really real money to follow because they needed bank accounts, because there is only, you know, a limited amount of volume in the mattress which can keep you cashing. So, you know, in the modern intelligence world, there are much better tools than following the money.
You got to follow the information. Well, I have just a couple seconds left. Who owns who owns the coronavirus?
So, you know, at the highest level, there's absolutely no doubt whatsoever that the Chinese Communist Party owns everything that comes out of the Wuhan P4 laboratory. Everything that comes out of the Wuhan Institute of Virology. They own everything that comes out of the WAPSI AppTech.
And George Soros is working with them?
George Soros was an investor during the 2011 time period. But George Soros may have seen an opportunity, a financial opportunity, to fund a significant biotech company in China that had, you know, almost all of the resources in front of them. They had the virus, they had the patients, they had the facilities to manufacture the vaccines. So, you know, for him, it may have been a golden opportunity.
Yaakov Appelbaum, thank you so much for joining us on the Food Chain Radio program, bringing a little light to a crazy situation. Thank you, Yaakov. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.